Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Intersolv first quarter earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require any operator assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Ms. Shannon Pleasant, Vice President of Corporate Communications. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today. I'm here with Necip Sayiner, Intersolv's President and Chief Executive Officer, and Rick Crowley, Intersolv's Chief Financial Officer. We will discuss our financial performance and provide a summary of our outlook. After our prepared comments, we will have a question and answer session. Our earnings press release and the accompanying financial tables are available on the Investor Relations section of our website at ir.intersolv.com. This call is also being webcasted, and a replay will be available through May 11th. Please note that the comments made during this conference call may contain forward-looking statements subject to risk and uncertainties that could cause our actual results to vary. These risk factors are discussed in detail in our filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Also, the non-GAAP financial measurements that are discussed today are not intended to replace the presentation of Intersolv's GAAP financial results. We are providing this information because it may enable investors to perform meaningful comparisons of operating results and more clearly highlight the results of core ongoing operations. Non-GAAP financial measures referenced during today's call can be found in the reconciliation of GAAP to non-GAAP results provided in today's earnings press release. I will now turn the call over to Intersolv President and CEO, Necip Sayiner.
Thanks, Shannon, and hello, everyone. First quarter results reflect the solid start to the year that we were anticipating, with consistent performance across the board. Revenue of $129.3 million was up 2.1% sequentially, much better than seasonal norms. Gross margin increased sequentially, operating expenses remained well managed, and for the 11th quarter in a row, we achieved 20% operating income. Design win traction is a key metric in assessing the health of our revenue pipeline and our prospects for long-term growth. Q1 did not disappoint, with the number of design wins up 30% for the company. Demand trends have also been improving. Particularly encouraging is the robust demand we are observing for INI products as we enter Q2. I will provide more detail on the business after Rick reviews the financial results. Rick?
Thank you, Necip. First, I'll summarize the GAAP results. First quarter GAAP gross margin was 58.8%, a 120 basis point sequential increase. Total first quarter operating expenses increased on a sequential basis to $60.8 million, with R&D investment of $33.7 million and SG&A expense of $23.5 million. GAAP operating income increased year over year, but declined slightly on a sequential basis to $15.2 million, or 11.8% of revenue. The Q1 GAAP tax rate was 20.2%, resulting in net income of $11.8 million and earnings per share of 9 cents. On a non-GAAP basis, first quarter gross margin of 59.1% increased by 130 basis points sequentially. This was ahead of our expectations, driven by a favorable mix in CNC, strong automotive performance, and lower manufacturing variances. 90 days ago, we stated that we expected Q4 would be the low point for our utilization, and that has proven to be the case. With Q2 mix favoring our INI business, we expect to see further sequential improvement in gross margin. Operating expenses were up as anticipated to $50.6 million, but were still below year-ago levels. R&D activity increased, driving investment to $30.6 million in Q1. SG&A expense declined to $20 million. We expect operating expenses to be up again seasonally in Q2 due to our annual raise cycle, as well as an increase in new product development costs and some non-recurring expenses related to technology development and sales training. We believe operating expenses in the second half of 2016 will be relatively stable to Q2 levels. Q1 non-GAAP operating income increased sequentially to $25.8 million, or 20% of revenue. The first quarter non-GAAP effective tax rate was 16.2%. Non-GAAP net income was $21.2 million. in Q1, resulting in non-GAAP earnings per share of 15 cents. We expect our non-GAAP tax rate will remain in the 16% range in Q2, and non-GAAP share count will be about 141 million shares. Turning to the balance sheet, quarter-ending cash and cash equivalents increased once again to $254 million. Accounts receivable balances increased by $6 million sequentially, and days sales outstanding were consistent with historical averages. On-hand inventory levels declined for the fourth consecutive quarter, ending at $64 million, or 110 days. Q1 free cash flow remained solid, and we returned $16 million to shareholders through our high-yielding dividend. In summary, Q1 was a very solid quarter, with improvements in the demand environment and strong operational execution contributing to an encouraging start to the year. Major?
Thank you, Rick.
Let's start with our CNC business, which achieved year-over-year growth for the second consecutive quarter. Revenue of $47.1 million was up over 8% compared to Q1 2015. CNC represented 36% of company revenue, down 1% sequentially, much better than what is typical of a seasonal first quarter. Computing revenue declined as expected in Q1, with seasonal trends somewhat offset by the transition to Skylake. Skylake adoption has muted the impact of declining PC units because of higher ASPs, but the transition has been slower than what we have experienced in previous generations. The mix of Skylake did increase during the first quarter, but only modestly, and the ramp continues at a very measured pace into Q2. We believe this will result in flattish computing revenue in the second quarter. On the consumer side, business is on track, with ramps in new mobile platforms accelerating during the first quarter. New product revenue is being driven by leading tablets and prominent smartphone wins. Securing these design wins in the presence of larger incumbents demonstrates Intersil's unique capability and growing relationships in the mobile market. We are focused on opportunities where we are highly differentiated and customers value the performance we provide. We target sockets that span multiple product generations with limited integration threats. For example, we recently announced the first USB-C compliant charger capable of supporting buck and boost mode for 1-3 cell lithium ion batteries in ultrabooks, tablets, and power banks. The single chip solution replaces traditional two chip charger solutions, extends battery life, and reduces customer bill of material costs by up to 40%. In the near term, we expect to see some digestion from the strong Q4 and Q1 ramps, with resumption of growth in the second half of 2016. Taking all of the Q2 dynamics into consideration, we expect CNC to be down low single digits sequentially. INI revenue grew 4% sequentially at the high end of our expectations, comprising 64% of company sales and reversing declines that persisted over the last year. While it's still premature to declare the INI end markets healthy, given demand is still below year-ago levels, the pace of recovery is better than what we had anticipated 90 days ago. The biggest success story within INI was automotive in Q1, which was up 28% year-over-year. Q1 automotive revenue was another record, increasing to 14% of company revenue. We have been focused on building out our automotive power portfolio to increase our content per vehicle. You can see the evidence of that in our new product introduction. Recently, we introduced new automotive boost controllers to support audio amplifiers, start-stop systems, and headlamp LEDs. They support wide input and output ranges and deliver greater than 95% efficiency. Numerous on-chip protection features keep the power supply safe
under all startup conditions.
We also introduced a new pin-compatible buck regulator family for
infotainment head units
and ADAS applications that address the load requirements of single, dual, and quad-core processors.
This enables car makers to deploy a single footprint
for entry-level to luxury car models. Highly reliable and efficient, these solutions offer customers a compelling value proposition. Historically, with video decoders alone, InnerSil's content per vehicle has been
about $4 to $5.
With additional power content in the infotainment
console and the cabin,
the dollar content more than doubled. For hybrid electric vehicles, where we can provide multi-cell balancing as well, the content steps up yet again. As you can see, the automotive business is going to continue to be a very strong element of our long-term growth story. In Q2, we expect that continued demand for our video decoders in rear-view cameras, combined with growing opportunities in China and Korea in particular, will contribute to further strength. INI Power, which was
19% of company revenue, was also up sequentially for both infrastructure and industrial applications.
I'm pleased with the progress we're making in expanding our portfolio, particularly with controllers.
For example, we recently introduced new hybrid controllers
that are based on our
high-performance analog control loop,
but also incorporate support for a digital
interface.
They're able
to deliver better performance in a smaller footprint than competing solutions while offering customers a familiar design flow.
Our strategy in INI Power has been to intersect key technology transitions to increase our share. One such transition
is the adoption of digital power conversion in data centers, where InnerSil is one of very few companies able to help customers
realize measurable power savings. This includes both 12-volt and the latest 48-volt configurations, where we have meaningful design wins in both types of platforms. Our content is increasing as well. We offer both single and multi-phase controllers
for core and point-of-load power, as well as new companion smart power stages.
Together, this increases our content as much as fivefold
in server platforms that are slated to start shipping
early in 2017. Moving on to industrial analog, which
represented 21%
of company revenue, we saw sequential improvement here as well. Growth contributed to both higher utilization and a higher margin INI mix, supporting the gross margin expansion during the quarter. This is a business that most closely follows the macro demand environment, so we view the sequential growth as a good sign of improving health in the long cycle market. We expect our industrial analog business to continue to improve in the second quarter. And lastly, aerospace was 10% of revenue in Q1, down sequentially,
which is not atypical of
this somewhat lumpy business. We expect new wins in aerospace to take off in Q2 and contribute to a return to sequential growth. Given the positive dynamics we've discussed, we expect all of the INI subcategories,
automotive,
power, analog, and aerospace, to be up sequentially in Q2. In total, INI is expected to be up mid to high single digits.
We're feeling good about our business, given better end market dynamics and an increasing proportion of new business
driving revenue growth.
For the second quarter, we expect revenue in the range of $130 to
$136 million. Based on a
more favorable product mix, we believe gross margin will increase
by 50 to 75 basis points sequentially. Non-GAAP operating expenses are expected to be in the range of $52 to $53 million. We anticipate GAAP earnings of 8 to 10 cents per share.
Earnings per share on a non-GAAP basis, excluding amortization and stock compensation,
are expected to be 15 to 17 cents. With that, we'll take your questions.
Thank you, Najib. We'd now like to open the call for your questions. Operator, please review the Q&A instructions of the call participants.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star and then the number one key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. And our first question comes from the line of Tore Svanberg with Stifel. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you, and congratulations on the results. I guess, first of all, Najib, could you talk a little bit about your relative visibility going into Q2? It does sound like, you know, obviously I&I is going to be up sequentially. But, you know, just sort of from a backlog coverage perspective, how do you feel about visibility going into the June quarter?
We've closed the first quarter with a book-to-bill just over one. We've had pretty stable bookings so far, quarter to date. We looked at the channel inventory, and it remained lean with no noticeable changes from the year end. We are seeing orders come in pretty broadly across all our segments. So far, everything is pointing to a reasonably good sequential growth for our I&I business in Q2.
Very good. And you talked about design wins being up 30%, but that's usually a good proxy for the growth that's to come. Would those design wins be broad-based across all of the separate business units? And does any of that give you confidence that maybe your CNC business could experience some growth in the second half of the year?
Yeah, there are two dimensions to the design win traction I'd like to elaborate on. One is on the CNC side, and these are generally proliferation of our products into the customers we have already won. Our products are being designed into more models and or some of the newer products with higher content and functionality are being designed into follow-on generations. By and large, however, the large increase in the number of design wins driven by the broad-based business coming from I&I side, we see this in power. We see this in our analog business. We see a lot of strength in our automotive business, both for video decoders and power products. So I think above all, beyond the large increase in design wins, I'm most pleased with the breadth of the design wins we're registering.
Sounds good. Just one last question on the automotive business. So it just continues to increase as a percentage of revenue, and it sounds like you have a little bit of an inflection point going on right now with dollar content doubling. But then obviously, you know, once we get to more of the power or the battery part of that content, when exactly should we expect that you know, to be an inflection point for the company? Are you already starting to see that now, or is that, you know, sort of more to come down the road?
The so-called BMS revenue is in very early stages at this point. This is with our multi-cell balancing product. The auto power business is approximately a quarter of the business now. That's much more diverse in terms of the sockets, both in infotainment console and in cabin. We have still an inflection point in this business to look forward to with 2018 model years. This will come in video decoders as well as power and as well as multi-cell balancing. So we haven't really seen the full benefit of this inflection due to new product investments yet.
Sounds good. Very nice quarter. Thank you.
Thank you, Tara.
And our next question comes from the line of Cody Acree with Derek's. Your line is now open.
Thanks, guys. Let me ask a question. Maybe just finishing up on the visibility question. I think you said after some digestion on the consumer products here in the second quarter, and then on the computing, also talking about a bit of a pickup after the second quarter, I guess, what's giving you some comfort that those markets that are going to be a little softer here in Q2 are likely to improve in the back half?
Hi, Cody.
We have had a very strong ramp at the end of 2015 into Q1 with some notable platforms ramping for product announcements toward the end of the quarter. It isn't unusual for our customers or the supply chain to order quite a bit ahead of that product launch. So we've seen really very meaningful quantities in Q1 exceeding our expectations. So we will see in the early part of Q2 especially a little bit of digestion of that product launch. Second half for those platforms always tended to be meaningfully stronger. And based on the forecasts we've seen from our customers, this looks to be the case this year. There are some additional proliferation of products inside those customers I alluded to will also start kicking in the second half of this year. So for us, at this stage, with the new products coming, this is really much more of a share gain story than relying on the strength solely of the end markets.
And on the computing side, you talked about that ramp of Skylake being a bit slower than expected. I guess, one, to what do you attribute that? And two, does that give you any comfort that this transition where you're picking up some market share and the increase in dollar content has some legs that might last you well into 2017?
Yeah. In terms of units, the expectations we had coming into the quarter, Q1 was not that far off in terms of actuals, but the mix was different. We've seen less Skylake than we anticipated. There are some very specific platforms that are going to ramp in the second half with our products with some large customers, so that should certainly increase the mix of Skylake in our computing business. Perhaps the silver lining in the slow adoption of Skylake that it, is what you're alluding to, that that increase in content will certainly have legs into the end of this year into next.
And then lastly, Rick, with CNC being a bit lighter here in Q2, and then maybe if it picks up in the second half, I guess how do those moving parts impact gross margin for the remainder of the year?
Yeah, Cody, you know, we said in the call in January, we expected our gross margin improvement for this year to be closely tied to the I&I recovery. If you recall, we went through a pretty big inventory depletion and lower demand in I&I in the second half of last year. In Q1, I&I demand improved, so the demand and the inventory have come back more into balance. So looking forward, you know, we've got it up 50 to 75 basis points. Most of that is mix related because I think now that the inventory is more in line with demand, the manufacturing variances are expected to become a smaller factor, you know, leaving mix being the biggest piece. So, you know, for the rest of the year, it's really the same thing as I&I demand moves, and that should help improve. So that should continue to help our gross margin going forward.
All right. Thanks, guys. Good luck.
And our next question comes from the line of John Pitzer with Credit Suisse. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. This is Steve Jaskowski on for John. I had a question regarding to your data center business. So last quarter, you noted some design wins with hyperscale data center providers. I was wondering how this business was tracking, if you could provide us a bit more color, what you think is a sustainable long-term growth rate, and maybe if this could rival the successful growth you've seen in your auto segment.
Well, the design wins we alluded to are moving forward. In that we continue to support our customers through their pre-production builds. These will hit production when Intel's next-gen Skylake server processor hits currently expected at the very end of this year or early 2017. So this is certainly moving on track. With all the engagements we've been able to secure. As I alluded to in my prepared remarks, this is a rather sizable addressable market for us. You know, with 10 plus million units of servers shipped every year and our content ranging from 30 to 50 or even higher, depending on the configuration or the number of processors on the server board, this is a $500 million opportunity for us for the product set. I think for our first generation offering, our share is likely going to be rather modest. But for that kind of addressable market, I think it will be a measurable improvement in revenues for our infrastructure business next year.
Great, thanks. And as my follow-up, I guess, you noted some improvements in the I&I segment. I was wondering if you could give any color on how that business, and particularly auto, performed by geography and how that factors into your longer-term outlook.
Okay. Well, in general, in Q1, all regions were up, albeit modestly, led by North America. When I look at Q2, North America and Asia Pac will be up, significantly driving that sequential growth. The product line segmentation in I&I is across the board. We've touched on automotive seeing a lot of strength. It will be another record quarter in Q2. We've seen a little bit of recovery in China LTE deployments, and we are levered to that with some of our power products. We'll see a meaningful start of ramp for a sizable project in our Mil-Aero business in Q2. And there's also just the seasonal strength in industrial contributing. So it's a pretty broad sequential improvement, both in terms of product lines and geography.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And our next question comes from the line of Craig Ellis with B. Riley. Your line is now open.
Well, thanks for taking the question, and nice job on the first quarter, guys. Najib, my first question is just a longer-term question on the nature of the consumer business. Can you just either quantitatively or qualitatively characterize the degree to which your OEM and platform penetration is broadening as you look at where you were a year ago, where you are now, and what the design-ins foretell for where you would be around a year from now?
Sure. I'll give it a try. You know, we have been expecting some of these
new revenue for a while now. The engagement on some of these platforms date back almost 2 years.
I think we've come a long way in securing not only this generation of sockets with some of these customers, but also the follow-on
generations
for 2017 already.
With
some of our new initiatives
on handsets, I'm pleased to see the proliferation of our product inside some of those customers. We've had a few customers
where we've had success in
China that we reported
on last year. Their success in their marketplace have been mixed, but some who
have been
successful
in
increasing
their share and have a global footprint, those customers have
chosen to put more of our products on their new platform,
so that is certainly helping.
So those two combined
really
contributed to a
record revenue
for
the new products in Q1. And, you know,
with
notwithstanding the
digestion we're talking about in Q2, I expect that
trajectory to
continue.
And do you see other meaningful new customers coming into your mix based on the design wins that you have, or as you look at the back half of the year and where you would be next year with follow-on platform engagements, is it the current set that that you would have?
So thus far, what we feel secure about
in terms of having
notched the design wins,
large
majority of that revenue
are going to be
driven with
existing customers, just on more platforms and or more content. There are
additional design wins
to broaden the customer base, but I would have to say majority of the revenue is driven by the larger platform wins.
Okay, thank you. And then the follow-up question is an intermediate-term question. And the business showed nice CNC year-on-year growth this year, and it looks like industrial and infrastructure could be on its way in another couple quarters. And that's really the question. As you look at the business and recognizing we're in a muddled macro with a cyclical industry, can you characterize your confidence that the two primary segments will be back to year-on-year growth this year, and what would the risks that that are out there be that they wouldn't get back to year-on-year growth? Thank you.
Yeah.
On the CNC side, you know,
the first half will
show certainly year-on-year growth, and the revenue was
on CNC was pretty flat throughout the year last year. So as with the second half ramps we're alluding to, I think it's almost a foregone conclusion
to suggest that we'll see year-on-year
growth
for CNC.
On I&I side, you know, we were not that sure about the pace of recovery when we reported 90 days ago. 90 days in into the year, the pace is a little ahead of our expectations.
The sequential improvement
in Q2 is a little ahead of what we would have projected. And
its breadth and
the lean channel inventories gives us some confidence that this is a
sustainable recovery. And if, you know, we don't see any
big impact on a global basis to the macro, you know, there's a good chance that I&I can also show a year-on-year growth when all said and done.
Thank you, Nigel.
Thank you, Kate.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, that's star then one. And our next question comes from the line of Ross Seymore with Deutsche Bank. Your line is now open.
Hi, guys. Thanks for letting me ask a question. It's a similar sort of question to what Craig just asked. If I look back, I guess, in the last year, year and a half, somewhere in the low to mid-90s was where your I&I segment had peaked out. Can you talk a little bit about what the drop has been caused by the subsegments within that, and anything that would preclude you from returning to that kind of mid to or low to mid-90s range?
Yeah, actually, that's very similar to the way we look at this. If you look at 2013, the I&I business was about $85 million run rate. 2014 was up at $90 million. That was a good year for some of our end markets. In 15, it went back to about an 85 run rate. And now we are somewhere in the 85 to 90 range. So I think the best way to look at this, in my opinion, is the observation that, unlike the CNC business, where in I&I we don't really have the benefit of new product revenues yet, the level of revenue has largely followed the ups and downs of the macro. It went up in 14 in a good year. It came down in 15. It was a more challenging year, and now we're seeing some signs of stabilization and recovery with improvement. So I think until we start delivering on new product revenue on I&I, that will remain the case. I am optimistic that with the new products slated to generate revenue for us beginning of 17, we'll start disconnecting from, in a positive way, from the ups and downs of macro in I&I. But that's been the past 3 years' history of I&I revenue.
Great, that's very helpful. I guess switching over, Rick, one for you on the margin side of things. If what you're talking about with the kind of seasonality plus company-specific growth in CNC in the back half of the year does occur, is it fair to say that that places some pressure on the gross margin in the back half of the year versus the first half of the year? And maybe another way to look at it is, how would you think about the year-over-year gross margin trajectory given what you guys think is going to happen in revenue mix in the back half of the year?
I think the CNC anticipated growth will not be as much of a headwind as you might be thinking. Some of the quality of these design wins that are ramping, that have ramped and will continue, have good margins for us. Of course, computing, the extent that grows with the Skylake, both seasonally and Skylake ramp, a little bit of a headwind, but the overall volume of revenue at its solid margins will help. So I would anticipate that we should be able to show solid year-over-year comparisons in the second half of the year on gross margins.
Great. And I guess if I can just sneak in one last one quickly. I think there was the Taos case. Can you give us an update on, I think there was a legal finding with the jury today. I know you guys have reserved against that to a certain extent, but any update on today's news would be helpful.
Sure. You know, after the jury verdict over a year ago, both the plaintiff and Intersil's defendant filed motions with the court. So this order today is really the judge's ruling that sets in motion the process for the court's final judgment. The amounts are in line with our current accrued liability. So pretty much as we anticipated a year ago. We feel the claims are without basis, and we will appeal the ruling. And that process will take, 12 to 18 months after the final judgment comes down, which should be relatively shortly.
Great. Thank you.
And our final question comes from the line of Betsy Van Hees with Wedbush Securities. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, and thanks for taking my question. Congratulations on the solid quarter. I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about seasonality trends. So it looks like we've got a couple of headwinds in the computing consumer business in Q2, And I was wondering if you could talk about what we would expect for broader seasonal trends in Q3 in both the I&I business, given that your business has changed so much from what it was a year ago today.
Hi, Betsy. Historically, the I&I business was about flat Q2 to Q3, and there was some level of decline into Q4. I don't expect this to be very different this year. One potential difference could be in our analog business, where we see a second half decline over the first half. But since we are coming out of a pretty weak period past few quarters and this business is in the recovery mode, we may not see that step down in our analog business in the second half. That could be one pleasant surprise. On the CNC side, typically the third quarter shows a notable improvement in revenues. And again, while we don't have great visibility into the demand of our customers or their end customers, based on what we are seeing from their polls and forecasts, we should see a repeat performance this year.
And then could we potentially, given the weakness of Skylake in Q1 and it looks like to be maybe Q2 as well, maybe sort of a snapback in the Q3 timeframe on top of what we're going to see in typical the computing business, or is that just too hard to tell at this point in time?
I think it is beyond our visibility. That can certainly happen. Most optimistic case. But so far, the pace of adoption has been slower than prior transitions. So we would plan on a more modest uptake. But what you're pointing out is certainly possible.
And then my last question has to do with inventory levels. Since the computing business did track in line with your expectations, but mix was different, is there any concern, given that you have had historically problems with inventories and had to do digestion, that there's any inventory issues or that you have the right mix, not only in the computing business, but also in consumer and I&I, so that the inventory that's sitting out there is going to be able to sell through and we don't have any repeats of unfortunate last year?
Well, the channel inventory was well within historical norms for us. Where we've seen some uptick in channel inventory was on the CNC side and primarily associated with the ramp that we were alluding to that our distributors were supporting. So some of that we know has already sold through. We are being very careful, particularly with our distributors in Taiwan, in managing their inventory in the computing segment. And thus far, I think we've been able to maintain it within acceptable norms.
Thanks so much for taking my questions. And once again, congratulations on a really great quarter.
Thank you, Betsy.
Thank you. And that is all the time we have for questions. I would now like to turn the call back over to Ms. Shannon Pleasant.
Thank you for joining us. This now concludes today's call.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This does conclude today's program. You may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.